From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour, the home team won, and the San Francisco Giants are the World Series champions. We'll discuss the Giants' victory last night over the Kansas City Royals in Game 7 of the World Series and the extraordinary performance of the team's most valuable player, pitcher Madison Bumgarner. What were your favorite moments from last night and the postseason? Call us now at 866-733-6786. Then at 9:30, we'll find out all about quantitative easing, the Federal Reserve Board's bond-buying program, which was shut down just yesterday by the Fed. We'll assess its overall effects on the economy. Join us for Forum next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Yesterday, the San Francisco Giants defeated the American League champion Kansas City Royals 3-2 at Kauffman Field in Kansas City to win the 2014 World Series. And this is the third World Series victory for San Francisco's team following a 2010 victory over the Texas Rangers and a 2012 victory of the Detroit Tigers. Giants pitcher Madison Bumgarner was named the game's most valuable player. In this Forum segment, we want to focus on last night's victory and the 2014 champion San Francisco Giants. Joining us, Marty Lurie, Giants pregame and postgame host, who's in Berkeley this morning, KNBR 68. Welcome, Marty Lurie, and congratulations to the team.
Good morning, Michael. What a story, huh?
What a story. Yeah, I want to get right into it with you, but let me also say good morning to Bruce Jenkins, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, which is screaming dynasty on their headlines. Bruce, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you both. And Marty, let me go to you first here. You and I love to talk baseball history, and I can't help thinking after the torture, the exaltation now, everybody's saying Bumgarner. Also, people are pointing to Bochy, ready for the Hall of Fame, Sabian, you know, brilliant play by Panic. There's so much to talk about, Morse's hit. But let's talk about Bumgarner first, just in a historical sense. I couldn't help being inspired to write on Facebook that we probably haven't seen his like since Koufax, and people started taking me on and saying, come on, Gibson, Kershaw, Seaver, Maddox, Lincecum. But I want your perspective on that. I mean, not only in terms of what he showed yesterday, but what he showed since he really came into his own.
Yeah, you know, Michael, this is one for the ages, and his name belongs up there with the Christy Mathewsons of the world. Of looking at Lou Burdett, looking at Mickey Lolich, looking at Bob Gibson, looking at Sandy Koufax. He did it in the World Series. He did it on the biggest stage possible. 21 innings, one run, coming back with 2 days rest, and completely dominating his opposition, just like the greats of the game dominated their opposition. Now, they were on their way to the Hall of Fame. You don't know about that for Bumgarner yet, but what he did in this World Series stands up with anyone who ever pitched in a World Series. And I think that's the perspective to take. In our lifetime now, for young baseball fans or new baseball fans, you have your Koufax in a World Series right now.
But Bruce Jenkins, after beating, after Kansas City beat the Giants 10-0, coming back like that and coming back with some really expert managing and an extraordinary play by Panic, as I said, to turn a double play, the first time in a World Series we've seen it go to video, so to speak. I mean, that even makes the triumph sweeter in many ways, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, so often in recent history, when it comes down to a Game 7, the home team wins. I mean, this hasn't happened since 1979 when Pittsburgh won Game 7 in Baltimore. That's what the Giants did last night. And, you know, but they seem to laugh at precedent because they always manage to win. They always pull it off, and they always do it as a team. And they took command of that game from the start, and it was just so impressive to watch.
So, are we talking about a dynasty here, as your paper blared this morning?
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to say that in historical context because the only other time this has happened in the long, long history of the National League, where a team won three championships in 5 years, was during World War II when the St. Louis Cardinals won in 1942, 44, and 46. And I think it's safe to say that the Giants' run has a little bit more meaning because the war took so many ballplayers off the field and into the service. It was a very depleted field, especially in 1944. And in that sense, I think you can say that the Giants really have had the most impressive five-year run in the history of the National League.
And getting back to Baumgartner for a moment with you, Marty Lurie, Bruce Bochy talked about him as the workhorse, and he actually talked about the players as warriors. I think it's even more in some ways celebrative, the fact that the last out was a guy who had hit a home run off him. But I'm just wondering what your take is on the fact that his father said, according to New York Times today, as Baumgartner's father said, this boy would steal a steak off the devil's plate. And I thought to myself, you know, there is something extraordinarily shifty about him. He's been compared to a thief and all that sort of thing. He really fools them, and he fools them in deceptive ways. Batters, that is.
Yeah, nothing bothers him. I mean, you saw him in the dugout during the innings that he was pitched, just sitting there looking around. After the ball was misplayed in the ninth inning, my goodness, it looked like Fred Snodgrass back in, 1912, or one of those moments. Could they actually tie the game up with two out? Nothing bothered him. Just stood on the mound and threw that fastball the way he knew to throw it to Perez. And there's just something about him. Coming back with 2 days' rest, I think, is the key. You see that very rarely in baseball, to throw so many innings in a shutout, then to come back with 2 days' rest. Nothing bothers him. He just took the ball. How many innings could he go? Well, I'll go as long as I have to. How many pitches can I throw? I don't know. A couple of hundred? He's just a throwback to the Dizzy Deans, to the Bob Fellers, to the country Catfish Hunter, the country hardball guys, that they just love the game. Nothing bothers them, and they just go out and do their job. And I think it was amazing to see him go five innings in relief last night. You win four games in a World Series, and he has a hand in three. That's pretty good.
Can we say something also about Jeremy Affeldt? He really came through.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in the game that Peavy threw, when that situation came up, Bruce Bochy left Peavy in, and Aoki got the base hit to left field and essentially continued that seven-run rally. Not last night, and this is what makes Bruce Bochy the manager he is. When Aoki came up this time with a chance to keep it going in the second inning, Hudson was gone, Affeldt came in, and Affeldt gave him 2 1/3 big innings, just like he did in 2010. And you look at his consecutive scoreless streak of postseason games, it's one of those amazing. He's a couple behind Mariano Rivera right now.
Yeah. And Bruce Jenkins, Sandoval hit pretty well, and Pence was on fire during this whole postseason series, particularly during the World Series. Are we going to see the Panda next year? Can you prognosticate a little bit on that?
That's the great question. I'd have to think so, but, the funny things happen on the free agent market. I mean, this guy was an absolute standout. You know, all the questions about his weight and everything else have completely vanished. He was fabulous. He hit over 400. He played a great third base. And, the rich cats in New York and Boston are salivating over this guy coming onto the free agent market and playing third base for them. And as such, I think you're going to see some pretty extravagant offers for him. You know, that you talk about offers up in the 7-year range for untold millions, and that doesn't fit the Giants' pay structure. Nor should it. I mean, these 7 to 10 year deals are totally ridiculous, completely out of proportion. And I think what the Giants are going to do is this: offer him a really solid 5-year deal, something along the lines of what Hunter Pence has in tow, and. What really has to happen is for Sandoval to tell his agent, listen, this might not be the best offer out there, but it's the one that I want. I'm a Giant for life. This is where I belong, and this is going to set me up for life financially. So it's going to be a little bit tricky, but I think Sandoval's heart is the key to all this and what he really wants to do.
I'm going to invite those of you listening to join us. And at what level is your exultation in the wake of this third World Series victory? And questions or comments, we'd certainly like to hear from you. We actually asked our listeners on social media to finish this sentence, and you can do so. Madison Baumgartner is, and well, let me just read a few here, unstoppable, a stud, a few weeks older than the Loma Prieta, and a living legend, just to give you a flavor. If you have some thoughts, some reflections, if you have questions for two of the best in the business as far as knowing the game, Marty Lurie and Bruce Jenkins, feel free to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, and this is just a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to add to the conversation or a question or comment, now would be the time to call. I'd like especially maybe to hear from some of you from outside of the Bay Area because, the numbers were down. there is a kind of Eastern Seaboard block. We talked about it with John Miller, in fact, the last time we spoke about the Giants. So excitement, thrills, maybe even some questions about some of the performances one way or the other. I mean, the bats of Buster Posey's bat, for example, was certainly not as hot as it usually is, at least in the World Series, and particularly last night. Anyway, we welcome your calls again, 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Let me, Marty, go back to you for a moment. I certainly don't want to diss Buster, who I'm a great admirer of here, because his work behind the plate far exceeded anything in the way of expectations. I mean, it was nothing short of great.
Yeah, you have to win up the middle. You know, Michael, you have to have that center fielder. You've got to have the double play combination, a pitcher and a catcher. Posey caught tremendously. You know, the Royals came in with this vaunted running game. They were going to run all over the Giants. They didn't do it. They had one stolen base the whole time, and he had a great throw to cut down a runner in the series. But he's tired. I think he the bat was slow, and he only had four singles in the series. So for Posey, it's okay to let the other guys pick him up. And for him, the legacy is three World Series titles, an MVP, a batting title, Rookie of the Year. He's on his way to the Hall of Fame. He just did not have a great World Series.
On the other hand, also I'm thinking, Bruce Jenkins, about the decision to put Perez in left field. He did strike out, I think, three times, and that last heart-stopping episode that we saw, he and Blanco kind of bobbled things. But it was probably, in, as you look at it defensively, the right choice for Bruce Bochy to make. Once again, kind of a smart choice by Bochy, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. He made a very important play in the game on a ball that Aoki hit down the left field line. That was an absolute double off the bat. And all of a sudden, oh, my gosh, Perez, he was sort of shading that way, but he got a great jump and hauled it down. That was a huge play. And just that alone, I think, validated the decision because, you know, the offense was in the hands of the old reliables, you know, Pence and Sandoval and Michael Morse. So it did work out beautifully.
And Marty, before we go to our calls and emails, what about that lower audience, TV, radio audience along the East Coast and particularly the Atlantic Seaboard? I mean, it's a bit aggravating for those of us here on the West Coast or for those in the Midwest, for that matter.
Well, I think it is. But, you know, it was a World Series devoid of the big stars that baseball has pumped up over the years. So we didn't have that in the World Series. The other part is, the championship series, the series for the pennant, you know, as I like to say, those series were really not very dramatic. The Royals breezed right through the Orioles in that one, and the Giants took care of the Cardinals in five games. So generally, at this time of year, you have the momentum of great series for the pennant, and then it leads into the World Series. We didn't have that either, but the lack of big-name stars, I think, was the problem for the TV audience.
Also, possibly the fact that you had two teams that didn't win their division championships, Bruce Jenkins?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think Marty hit on it when he talked about the lack of stars. I think, you know, people, you know, they wanted to see the big names, you know, the Kershaws and Mike Trouts and everything. But meanwhile, Madison Bumgarner is about as big a star as you're ever going to have. I mean, what he did was really, really stunning. But I don't know. It's funny because, you know, we were so immersed in this thing and it was so compelling, and it is a little bit depressing to learn about the TV ratings, but you know, people they gravitate to stardom and marquee names, and that was missing. But I guarantee you the real baseball fans were watching, and I know you know, I'm sure a lot of kids were watching too. If they could stay up.
Bruce Jenkins with us by phone, by the way, from Kansas City, sports columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, and Marty Lurie, the Giants pregame and postgame host for KNBR 680. And let's go to your calls. Dave, join us, Dave. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I'm so glad you're having this topic. I have one favorite moment and then a question. The favorite moment, other than Bumgarner, of course, was looking back that last hit before the end of the game. I think I almost tipped over our couch with my family on it because I was so freaked out when Blanco missed that hit. But looking back, it really made it an exciting inning. But as far as my question goes, I was kind of curious as to why the decision went to turn Bumgarner's win into a save. I was kind of wondering what was the thinking behind that.
Ah, Bruce Jenkins.
Well, in a situation like that, it's at the official scorer's discretion. It was originally given to Bumgarner, but I think, you know, technically speaking, Elfelt was in the game when the Giants took the lead, and he did pitch two-plus innings. And he wound up getting the win, which I think is absolutely perfect. I mean, Elfelt was so great, just relentlessly great all through the postseason, all through every postseason he's ever been in. And for Bumgarner to get the save, I think is perfect. I mean, he saved everything. He saved the team. He saved the series. And I think there was justice in all that.
Let me thank Dave for the call and go right to another caller. Keegan, that's you. Hi, you're on.
Hello, yes. As someone who didn't really follow baseball before this year, I've definitely, you know, owe the Giants quite a bit moving to San Francisco. But I just wanted to share my favorite moment, obviously being Joe Panik's toss while he was on the ground. That was epic and should be the number one spot of ESPN's top 10 today, for sure.
That was an amazing play, Marty Lurie, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was terrific. You know, Joe Panik coming up to this team really was one of the major reasons they got to the position they were in. Not only was he terrific in the field and he has a great eye, but this guy batted second. He was put in the number two spot. It allowed Pence to go to the five spot and really turned things around for the Giants. I can't say enough about Joe Panik. What I like to say, you know, Michael, I have the phrases, you know, that's baseball. He's a baseball player. That's the best thing I can say about him.
Yeah, the great thing about that play, he made it look so easy, but if you have the ball in your glove and then you throw it to the shortstop, you know, from the glove without having the time to grab it and throw it with your hand is a very difficult thing to do. Sometimes the ball won't go at all, or it'll just pop into the air a couple feet, and he got a lot on it. It was perfect. I mean, it could not have been more perfect. The kid, has wonderful, wonderful instincts.
He's made me stop missing Marco Scudero so badly.
I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, when Scudero, it was so obvious so early that he wasn't going to be able to contribute to this team, and if you're thinking, oh my goodness, what are they going to do? This is such a key position on the team. They brought up Nick Noonan, his star kind of faded if he ever had one, and they had Dan Uggla over there, for heaven's sake, for a while. And then all of a sudden, Panik shows up, and he's a full-grown man, and he knows what he's doing, and he absolutely took command of that position, you know, maybe for the next 10 years.
Another caller on Panik. Deborah, welcome. You're on.
You know, I think my question is mute now. I was wondering why, you know, all the big stars were getting lots of attention and that these, you know, rookies weren't getting a lot of attention or dealing with how many great things they did. Especially Panik getting in there, and people would say, wow, wasn't that really great? And then move on to Bumgarner, and who I adore. And, you know, I have crushes on lots of these guys. But I really wanted to say that Panik's just been an understated star all along. So thanks for your comments.
And thanks for your comments, Deborah. Good to hear from you. I'm going to go to some of our listener emails. Here's a listener who says, please, can't the Giants do just a little to promote good behavior after they win? Their social media pages show the clean side of the celebration, while my neighborhood and lots of areas of San Francisco get torn apart every time they win a series. It ruins the fun for a lot of us and makes me think less of the team and the sport. Thank you. Well, the Giants can't be responsible for that bad behavior, but we did see it, and unfortunately, it seems to rise whenever a series is won. But I couldn't help thinking, Marty Lurie, about the fact, especially being Cleveland-born, that we're pretty fortunate here. I mean, not in terms of that kind of bad behavior that people show after the series wins, but there are so many teams that simply don't get to this level, and places like Cleveland that long for this kind of a triumph of their team and just don't see it.
No, and you can't take it for granted, Michael. You said it very well. Look, there are 29 other teams who are home right now thinking about what they're going to do over the winter to get better, to get into this position. We're very fortunate. And, you know, you can't say enough about Brian Sabian for the way he has put the team together, for putting a coaching staff like this together, not panicking during a season. There's just something comforting about the way they play. They're men playing baseball. And you look at last night's game, it was almost a near-perfect game, with Sandoval tagging up on a fly ball and going to third and then scoring. Belt getting two big hits in the scoring innings. And the sacrifice flies by Morse and Crawford. Morse, 0-2, hits the ball to right field for a base hit. We're very fortunate to see a very, very good baseball team here. And it doesn't happen that often. Bruce said it perfectly. 3 in 5 years in the long history of the National League, this is only the second time it's happened.
Let me read some more of the question to you listeners. Madison Bumgarner is, Michael writes, the new Mr. October. Nick writes, for president. And Douglas adds, I think every San Franciscan needs to pledge that Madison Bumgarner never buys a drink in San Francisco for the rest of his life. He does prefer beer, as everyone knows, I guess. Wade writes, let's not forget Bumgarner also had 2 Grand Slams this year, and I was at both of them. And Scott writes, why must every modern discussion be centered around dynasty? Just enjoy for what it is. Here's James, who raining a little bit on the parade, and the parade may get rained on tomorrow. He says, we're having national elections. Tea Party types are largely driven by resentment. What effect does a World Series victory of a San Francisco team, effete liberal San Francisco, have on those heartland resentments? Does the poor Democratic showing in 2010 and 2012 owe anything to the San Francisco World Series victories? There's a question to ponder. And here's another one. Actually, Bruce, if I can go to you on this. Emma says, I haven't watched many games, but I saw a few pitches hit batters last night. Is this typical? Is the plan to psych them out or just plain bad pitching? I don't think it was intentional, and it's not necessarily something we see that often. But a comment, Bruce Jenkins?
Well, no. Once you get to Game 7 of the World Series, there are no wars of intimidation taking place. Every pitch, means the world to these guys. You can't afford to hit someone intentionally, and it just doesn't happen. I mean, the most notable one, Tim Hudson hit Salvador Perez, the great catcher of the Royals, and it really put him down for a while. Hit him just above the left knee, and he was really hurting. And I'm sure Hudson felt bad. I mean, it's the last thing he wanted to do.
But he was the last out.
And he turned out to be the last out. I mean, he stayed in that game. I think, a lesser man might not have made it even to first base. They had to walk him down there. He could barely run for a few minutes. But he stayed in the game, wound up being the last out. There's certainly no intent on the hit batter in this situation of this magnitude.
You could tell that Hudson felt bad about it. In fact, I know Hudson, Marty Lurie, has a very close relationship with Bumgarner, and to some extent, I keep thinking the older Giants, especially on the pitching staff like Hudson and Vogelsong, and we don't know how long we have for those pitchers, not Lincecum. Lincecum's sort of in between there. We don't know where Lincecum is. I'm thinking of Jake Peavy. But then you've got, the younger players like Bumgarner and, Duffy to some extent, certainly Panic. I mean, it's almost like two teams in a way.
Well, absolutely. And, don't overlook Matt Cain here. Matt Cain had a tremendous influence on Bumgarner when he came up. And, Bruce knows they would interview Bumgarner and ask him a question. He'd say, well, whatever Cain said, that's what I have to say. A couple of country guys, but yeah, there's a core group of this team that will go forward. I mean, you've got Belt at first base, you've got Crawford, but a tremendous World Series at shortstop. You've got Posey behind the plate, you've got Pence, who's a young veteran in the outfield, and then, of course, you've got the guys who came up. Andrew Susak may have a big part in this team next year.
Well, it's a great victory. Thank you so much to Marty Lurie and Bruce Jenkins, and thank you to the Giants. We'll be back for another segment of Forum. This is Michael Krasny.